This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to Pacific Pulse on ABC Radio Australia.
Acknowledging is one thing and acting is another thing. And so we're trying to bridge that space to make sure that we're not only observing what's happening, but seeing ways that we can make sure that it's helping to improve what we do in the future as well. Because with obesity, diabetes, hypertension, these are not one-off conditions. They are things that people live with and are constantly affected by. And so it takes a lot of will. It takes a lot of resilience. It takes a lot of just perseverance at the end of the day and time.
You might call it sick sugar or mahi sugar, or you might know it as type 2 diabetes. Either way, we'll be talking about it a lot on Pacific Pulse because we have all lost people we love to this disease. But just because a disease is common in our communities, it doesn't mean that it's inevitable. Type 2 diabetes can be prevented, and the more we know about how it's impacting Pacifica people, the more we can tailor prevention measures that make sense to us. That's why the Ola Tupu Toboae study is so interesting. It's led by the Yale School of Public Health in the US, but it's been carried out in Samoa. It has been following the health of Samoan children for the last 9 years, coming back every couple of years to measure things like blood sugar levels and body mass index. The study has a range of goals, and researchers are learning so much about the impacts of childhood obesity in Samoa. Dr. Courtney Choi has been with the study since it began, and she's co-leading the fourth wave of data collection. Talo Falava, thanks for being here, Courtney.
Yeah, maile tefua, maile langi na ma, ilea lofa, ilea tua, wa tato, kalawa iai. Alolina Courtney, it's so nice to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Beautiful. Can we begin with a bit of context? Type 2 diabetes develops over time, and most people living with the disease are over 45. But what are the precursors that you're seeing in the Samoan children you followed through the study?
So we've recently been measuring glycated hemoglobin, which is an indicator of blood glucose in the blood, over the past 3 months. And it's been shown that children that have above 5.7% in childhood, specifically starting at 10 years old, may be at higher risk for diabetes in adulthood. And so what we've observed in Samoa most recently was 1 in 10 children had levels of HbA1c glycated hemoglobin above 5.7%, which is really concerning for us from a public health perspective.
Can you talk me through how type 2 diabetes affects kids?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's actually two types of diabetes. There's type 1 that's related to the way that your pancreas creates insulin to process glucose. But then with type 2, it's actually more related to the way your body recognizes glucose in your body and how it processes that. And so when a child's affected by diabetes, we're seeing that they are metabolizing, say, foods differently, the amount of energy they might have is differently. But specifically, when we were looking at glycated hemoglobin, we're trying to better understand ways we can pinpoint and screen for children who may be at higher risk and should be looked at more closely over time to monitor them.
That's really interesting. If we can take it back to the Ola Tupu Toboae study, you followed the same group of children since they were babies, which is incredible. What are you measuring?
Yeah, so when the study began in 2015, at 2 to 4 years old, we were just trying to get an idea of overall nutritional status. What is their risk of overweight obesity? What is their risk of anemia, which happens when there's low hemoglobin in their blood? And that's really important for delivering oxygen to different parts of their body, for energy, brain development. And so we started to measure these different indicators of nutritional status and found that about 16% of the kids at 2 to 4 were at high risk of overweight obesity. And so every 2 years, we've actually been following up with these children, measuring weight, height, and other things over time, such as blood pressure and glycated hemoglobin that I just spoke of, to really understand what could be putting children at higher risk or even protecting them from this risk of obesity and other cardiometabolic diseases like diabetes and hypertension.
Mm. Gosh, there's a lot there to monitor. What are the benefits of following the same group over several years?
Yeah, so it's really wonderful to have this information over time on the same children, because we can actually start to look at changes specifically that make it happen in the individual, to look at their development over time. But also we can ask questions about their behavior, their lifestyle, and things in their daily routine that might be changing. And since we're seeing them at certain time intervals, we can actually determine, hey, they were behaving this way at 2 to 4 years old, but really how might that affect their health status, say at 6 to 9? And so being able to determine these times and the ages that certain things are happening is really powerful when it comes to trying to answer these questions of what could be putting children at greater risk for certain diseases, or in fact protecting them in some way, to have say lower BMI that's more at the moderate level that we would expect for growth, or if it's something that puts them at a higher risk because there's higher increase in levels of body sizes at certain periods.
Mm. And so in terms of the cause of these results, why are Samoan kids at risk of developing type 2 diabetes?
That's a very complicated question, and I think part of it is it's a great question. It's something that I've been striving to really answer with a lot of our partners in the United States, in Samoa. And it's not just diabetes risk. We're also trying to look at obesity risk and hypertension risk, all these diseases that we know are responsible for 3 in 4 deaths currently in the Pacific in adults. We're really trying to see, how can we address this by health promotion programs, or really trying to identify behaviors and parts of the lifestyle that we can, in fact, talk to the community about and focus interventions on to reduce that risk? Because there's certainly diet that comes into play, but there's also physical activity. There's also sleep. There's also mental and emotional well-being. And so we're trying to piece together all the different parts of a child's life to kind of see ways in which it might influence their risk.
You've been living in Samoa while doing this work. What have you observed about children and their lifestyles, especially when you mention things like sleep? I imagine children would be less on technology in Samoa than they might be in places where we are in Australia. What have you observed in this work?
My goodness, coming from Oahu, in Waipahu, I see actually a lot of similarities between the communities that I grew up with through my childhood and the families that I see now in Samoa. It's a very fast-changing environment. I remember the time when data was very extensive on island. I don't actually know if we could have had this high quality of a Zoom call before, done so easily back in 2015. And now I see people with their phones, everyone having data now. I see children also knowing how to use the cell phones of their parents as well. And I mean, the ways that their changes have happened in Samoa, from what I've observed, not just with technology, but also infrastructure, so roads and access to cars, and how that might be influencing activity levels or playtime for these kids. That's what we're kind of hoping we'll be able to look at more systematically with the data over time, with the different years that we've been able to measure well-being and health. But I think the kids are just so happy, but also playful, but also like they go through the same changes that I've seen in my own home country and Hawaii, where, there are struggles that happen in school with changes in life. Just as children are growing up, they are also becoming young adults and learning about like challenges of life and taking more responsibilities in families, and the way that they're feeling too about their connections at home. We're starting to document like the ways that children are feeling about their life and their home and even school and their friends and connections with their community.
It's a long-term study, but, you know, how was the information being used immediately to improve lives for Samoan children?
Yeah, right now the data has been really helpful to advocate for continued programming focused on these chronic conditions such as obesity, diabetes, and focal tension. The difference with chronic disease is that you don't often see quick returns. And so it's a constant conversation that has to keep happening about what should we focus on? How do we continue to encourage people to focus on certain behaviors and lifestyles? And so one way that we've used the data is that we've been able to monitor nutrition over time. And there's been a lot of questions about whether or not specific diets are related more closely with higher body size than we'd like on island. And so we have used that data to really advocate for more nutrition programming, but also informing a lot of the educational materials as well, because there's a lot to celebrate too of what's been done, because children are eating fruits and vegetables. They understand that really there's a high like understanding of the fact that a local diverse diet, like with lots of local produce, fruits and vegetables, is really important. But how do we, as public health servants, like help to support that in different ways? And part of that comes down to ways that we can secure funding. Mm-hmm. And so that's one angle. Secondly, like in the community, every family who participates in this program always receives immediate feedback, meaning that if we measure your blood pressure, we give you that number back right away. These HbA1c levels that I've been talking about, the families know immediately what their levels are before we even leave their house and finish the follow-up visit, which is really great. And also, because we've been able to see the same people over time, we actually can deliver back information about their body size as well and their relative risk.
You're listening to Pacific Pulse on ABC Radio Australia.
I'm Melissa Makin, and I'm talking to Dr. Courtney Choi, who is one of the lead researchers undertaking the Ola Tupu Tupuae study in Samoa. It's been following the health of a group of Samoan children for the last 9 years to identify risk factors of obesity and related issues like type 2 diabetes. There's clearly so much to celebrate and embrace about a study like this. And you mentioned, being really transparent about the results. But for the parents who received those results, I can imagine there would probably be some feelings of fear or guilt. How do you support them? Yeah. What's your process there?
Yeah, I think we come in as listeners too, like, because every family has a different question that comes to mind when they say, oh, like, you asked the same question last year. Why are you asking it again? Specifically, is there anything that you're worried about? And for us, we try to explain not only the fact that we're here for a follow-up visit, but also the way that their information is contributing to understanding, like, overall health of children in Samoa. And so when it comes to trying to answer questions of the families, we're very lucky to have, I'm just one person here today talking to you, but it's really a team effort that has made this possible to be able to communicate with families about ways in which what we're seeing is part of just the process of monitoring and just getting a better understanding of what's going on with the child. And for the most part, if there are any concerning levels, say very high levels of HbA1c or very low levels of hemoglobin to indicate anemia risk, we make sure that there are referrals in process so that they can bring back the results. I get a proper checkup with a primary care provider on island, one of our local doctors that we partner with. And it's really important that they know that this information, it's to better understand also ways that we might be able to make changes if we want to in our life, or even just open up the conversation discussion about, hey, like, why do you ask so much questions about activity? And so it's actually another way to tell Anoa and explain just everything that we've been learning in country as well. So it's learning for both of us, I think, on both sides, because we also see like where families are most concerned too, even if they're not questions that we ask. They're like, hey, have you, I remember one family that I spoke to last year, and they were very concerned about the anemia because it's not a common condition that's screened for in the community, but it's something that can be treated, whether it be with iron syrup, supplementation, or even just considering things that they eat.
Courtney, can we jump into a little bit more about you? What drives your work in this space?
My heart is always in the Pacific. I grew up in Waipahu. I say the auntie of a lot of families, not only in Oahu, but also across the Pacific. And so for me, I see children as the future, not only of just Samoa here, but also they're going to be the future caregivers. There are going to be the future lawyers. They're going to be the future public servants. And so for me, knowing that I can work with youth in this program has been very, very motivating every year. And I think of ways that I want to be able to serve and give back to the communities that have given me so much over time.
It's beautiful to hear that. Had you been to Samoa much before you came to carry out the study?
My very first time was in 2015, and I did not know that something that was going to be 3 months would turn into this 9-year journey. I'm grateful for it every day, and I always say, as long as I can serve the community here, promote public health, like I will absolutely return as much as possible. But at the end of the day, I always want to make sure that the knowledge that I've learned, everything that I've received, I can give back in a way. And if it happens to be where I'm not needed anymore, I would absolutely understand. But it's been such a blessing and truly so lucky to be part of welcomed in the community, having our partners, the Ministry of Health, also at the university. It's been truly remarkable, that to the point in which sometimes I can't believe I'm lucky enough to wake up and still be a part of this work.
It's, I think, clearly such a testament to you and your work and the way that you reflect on that concept of working yourself out of a job almost, you know, when you're saying, you know, that point of elevating everyone around you. Can you tell me about the work that you're doing in conjunction with local health services in Samoa?
Yeah, so we're really trying to see ways that we can better leverage and use data to better inform programs for children to promote healthy behaviors and lifestyles in which it would address obesity risk and other cardiometabolic risk factors like diabetes and hypertension. And so what I'm really excited is to be working alongside public health professionals here with so much experience and trying to see ways in which we can work to make programs more family-centered, engage with villages, especially when children are not just cared by immediately family members. It requires everyone, a collective effort. And so trying to understand ways we can do that better, but also learning from our Pacific brothers and sisters, because there's actually been amazing programs done in Aotearoa. There's also been some done in French Polynesia. I've seen some in Oahu personally. And I really want us to be able to synthesize and look at everything all together and see, hey, how can we take some of these lessons learned and now better adapt it for the programs within the Fa'a Samoa context for children here?
I wanted to get one more final observation. How does this study, you know, and the work that you're doing make you feel about the next generation that's coming through? You mentioned lawyers and politicians and doctors, you know, when you reflect on those young kids, how has that affected you?
I have a lot of hope for the future and the days that I'm able to spend in the community with the families and seeing these children that were once literally at my hip and now I'm looking up at them because they were taller than me. I'm only 5'1", so it's not saying much. But
they're only 10.
But it gives me a ton of hope. It is not my favorite thing to do, to relay back information about health risks, but it's important to acknowledge because at the same time, it's an opportunity to celebrate the great things that they're doing in their life. And also we've asked questions about what they dream about doing in the future, and what they love the most about their life or the best thing about themselves. And with that, we're able to also say, hey, give it into context. You know, there's this risk, but look at all these great things that you're already doing for yourself in terms of what you're saying you're doing for play, like these great connections that you seem to be telling us about at school. That's wonderful to hear. I mean, trying to talk positively, but acknowledging the reality of what we're seeing with their health is, I think, very important so that we can all continue to have this conversation about what we could always be doing better for ourselves to be taking care of the youth, too. Because acknowledging is one thing and acting is another thing. And so we're trying to bridge that space to make sure that we're not only observing what's happening, but seeing ways that we can make sure that it's helping to improve what we do in the future as well. Because with obesity, diabetes, hypertension, these are not one-off conditions. They are things that people live with and are constantly affected by. And so it takes a lot of will. It takes a lot of resilience. It takes a lot of just perseverance at the end of the day and time to be able to work on. And so we're trying to make sure that we try to be as present as possible, supportive. And I mean, we've been just really lucky to have some of the best people to work with in the communities. There are ups and downs always, but being able to work together through the challenges has been more than anything made this possible, especially with the program itself. We've also used it as an opportunity to try to teach one another new things and build capacity on island for public health services. And I've been grateful to have tremendous mentors that have really guided me in thinking about the big picture. Data and research is one thing, but thinking about what it means for the lives of people who share it with us, who make it possible, is really something that we are not only trying to do better about acknowledging, but making sure that they're engaged in the process as well, to see how much of an impact. Like, it's not immediate, but they are really helping us to try and build better lives, starting from youths and hopefully contributing to others in Pacific communities.
Wow, it's incredible to hear just how passionate you are about this work and the impact that it's having. We're not going to be able to get across all of it, but listening, what are some of those initial first steps that you can make every day to reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes, if there were any key ones that you were able to recommend?
When it comes to trying to reduce risk of obesity, diabetes, hypertension in childhood, what we're learning is that it will take a family effort at the end of the day with youth. And so we'll need to be not only encouraging local fruits and vegetables to be eaten as part of daily meals, but also making sure that we're moving around as well, because there's been so much evidence to show how important that activity is for cardiovascular health. And right now, when it comes to those two things, that can be a start. But then also there's much more things that we can do from the perspective of just creating safe spaces and being there as we're growing up and open to change.
Dr. Courtney Choi, thank you so much for your time on Pacific Pulse.
Thank you so much, Melissa. This has been really fun to have this conversation with you.
Getting these messages and health interventions out there clearly takes a village, literally, and a lot of trust too. It's been beautiful to hear Dr. Courtney Choi's heart for the Samoan children and families she gets to work with. Pacific Pulse will be back next week, but in the meantime, you can listen back to any of our episodes. Just search online for ABC Pacific Pulse or look for us wherever you get your podcasts. Pacific Pulse is produced on the lands of the Yuggera and the Turrbal people.